Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to this Thursday edition of Today's Issues here on American Family Radio, June the 13th, it is. And we'll be here for the next hour and 25 minutes talking about what is going on in the world. I'm Tim Wildman again with Ed Vitagliano. Good morning, Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
Dr. Ray Pritchard, who's usually with us on Tuesdays and Thursdays, is not today. So Ray's traveling somewhere, probably teaching the Bible. Fred Jackson's here. Good morning, Fred.
Good morning. What a beautiful day here in northern Mississippi.
Yeah.
Wow.
We are.
Speak for yourself.
All right. Now we have to tell people why Ed is glum.
Well,
Can I?
Go ahead. Yeah.
Cut number two.
Down to 10 seconds remaining. Blues jumping up and down on their bench as the puck is cleared down ice. No icing as time winds down from worst to first in just over 5 months. The St. Louis Blues, for the first time in franchise history, have won the Stanley Cup.
That was cold.
Pun intended, but, probably.
But I will tell you, that's pretty brilliant that you went and got that.
Yeah, he sprung that. Ed.
Yes, I had no idea he was going to do that.
Fred sprung that on me and Ed. What we're talking about, Ed's a huge Boston Bruins fan, yes. And the St. Louis Blues beat them last night in the Hockey World Championship, otherwise known as the Stanley Cup. But,
Game 7 hey,
you know,
in
when
Boston.
When you lose when you lose the World Championship in 7 games, you know, it takes you a day or two, but then you start going, well, wait a minute. We were one of the last two standing here. Yes, we didn't win it, but it doesn't make you feel any better today.
That doesn't make me feel – it won't make you feel any better in 2 or 3
okay,
days, Tim.
Okay. Well, I was trying to put a –
You're not feeling me here.
I was trying to put a Joel Osteen moment on you there.
No, I'll say this. My pastor, Scooter Noland, who's a pastor of Hope Church here in Tupelo, is also a board member for AFA. He emailed me and said, I was sorry that I heard that.
Condolences.
Condolences. And I said, listen, tomorrow night my wife and I get to babysit my grandkids. We're going to be eating pizza.
Right.
I don't go to hell when I die.
Right.
All right. I have a good life.
Even though your team lost in the Stanley Cup 7th game.
Put this in perspective.
But for the St. Louis fans who are listening right
Elation.
Now.
First
time in their history, and they've been around the NHL for more than 50 years.
Wow.
Yeah, 52 years.
Stop and think about that for a second.
Bill, I went on Facebook and congratulated Bill Fancher, who was – preceded you, Fred, as news director.
That's right.
He's been a St. Louis Blues fan all his life.
Yeah.
And his joy exceeds my sadness. So I congratulated him. You know what? I'll say this about hockey. At the end of the game, at the end of every series,
when
in the playoffs, these guys get in a line and they shake hands.
And hug.
And hug some of them.
Yeah.
And that's after beating the stuffing out of each other. So it really is. It's a wonderful sport, and I enjoy watching it and have fun doing it. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day.
Now you'll have to wait till when, October?
October is when it starts again. I do this every year. I go, I don't know if I'm going to watch hockey next year. It's a lot of investment. You get emotionally involved. And then I'll be – In a week, I'm going to be looking at the NHL rumors websites. What kind of trades the Bruins going to work on?
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah,
that's fun.
I think psychologists would call that an addiction, basically, Ed. But it's a healthy okay.
It's not an addiction. I could quit anytime I wanted.
Yeah, I know. Right.
Well, I think one of our goals has to be.
Goals. I like that.
One of our goals has to be is to get Tim – to a game.
Tim is fishing on the bank. He is liable to slip in.
I'm learning. Ed's helping me learn. I am paying attention to, you know.
We ought to, go to an NHL game.
A Nashville game.
Yeah. I think I'll go to Nashville.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's closest to us next fall or whenever they come next year.
Yeah.
All right. We're talking hockey while the world burns here, basically.
It's burning in the Straits of Hormuz.
Yeah, turning the page here on an extremely and serious matter. Mm-hmm. Fred, what's going on?
Well, there's a couple of big stories this morning that we woke up to. Early this morning, this was the sound of a riot in northern Memphis. Cut one. It was pretty bad, and basically what happened...
Come on, Memphis, Tennessee.
Memphis, Tennessee, the northern part of the city there. There was a Gulf Coast Regional Fugitive Task Force went to serve warrants on a young man early this morning there. He was wanted on several charges. When they approached the house, apparently the young man fled the house, got into a vehicle, rammed several police vehicles, and then according to the reports, he exited his vehicle with a weapon and he was shot and killed. When word of that got out in that neighborhood in North Memphis, Tennessee, a riot broke out. And when it was over, at least 24 police officers were injured. I'm sure there will be charges laid, et cetera, but it was mayhem. It was riot.
Why?
It was tear gas. They, the rioters were upset. This family of this man who was shot and killed in the area, apparently well known, and they thought that the police did wrong, and they responded this way.
You know, I certainly, let me just, I want to be careful here.
Yeah.
I certainly understand that there may be members of the black community who get frustrated with law enforcement, who believe they are unfairly singled out, pulled over while driving black, et cetera, et cetera. But I got to tell you, it's not going to end well if you resist the police.
Yeah.
If you get in a vehicle, whether he had a weapon or not, mm-hmm. when he got out of the vehicle, if you get in a vehicle and start ramming police cars, mm-hmm. okay, it's not going to end well.
No.
And I'm not sure what's going on in a person's head who thinks it is going to end well. Now, I hate that this young man got shot. I don't know how old the person is.
He was 21 years old.
21 years old. That's sad.
It is.
I mean, that is sad for someone to lose their life at that young age. I guess I can understand. I can at least empathize, whatever the right word is. I wouldn't want to lose my son at 21 years old, and you make stupid mistakes, and you go, well, I don't want him to die over it.
No.
But just... I don't know, just cooperate with the police, and if there's a lawsuit to be filed afterwards, do it, but you're alive mm-hmm. to do it later.
Yeah.
well, yeah, I don't know enough details here other than what you've told us. So this man, 24 police officers hurt?
That's what the story
is. Riots, yeah.
In the riots, yeah.
Right. So... the way you described it, Fred, and I know you're reporting what the news accounts are from the Associated Press, mm-hmm. this 21-year-old man was...
wanted.
Wanted.
And
for what reason? Do you know?
No, there's several charges. They don't list them here. But this Gulf Coast Regional Fugitive Task Force went to this home in... It's a Fraser...
That wasn't the Memphis City police officer.
No, sir. No, sir.
This must have been... A guy who was wanted for some serious...
Yes, felony warrants. So, okay. Yes, serious charges.
Okay.
Now, I'm reading here from a New York Post story that says, Shelby County Commissioner and mayoral candidate Tammy Sawyer said on her Twitter feed that Brandon Weber, this is the young man,
yes,
was shot 16 to 20 times in his family's front yard. Now, here's the thing that I understand from police. If they believe you've pulled out a weapon, mm-hmm. this is not like television where they try to shoot it out of your hand or they shoot you once. You pull out what they think is a weapon, they're going to empty their guns. Mm-hmm. Now, that's my understanding. That is procedure by the police. You do not want a wounded man raising a gun. Mm-hmm. So you raise what looks like a weapon, whether you had a weapon or not, I don't know. Well, I guess we'll find out. But if they think you've got a weapon and you're going to shoot... they empty their weapons. That's why he was shot 16 to 20 times. Now, people who know this young man, Brandon Weber, are probably going, what'd you shoot him 16 to 20 times for? Well, it's because they thought he was going to kill one of them.
Yeah.
That's just
well,
the way
they
do it.
Well, let me just say, to your point, Ed, if it happened like you've described, Fred, if you have basically a fugitive of the law, mm-hmm. is that what you're saying, mm-hmm. who's dangerous, mm-hmm. And then this guy realizes the police are there, not the police as in the Memphis police, but I mean a
task force,
which I'd never heard of this. So, that sounded like to me almost like a SWAT team.
Was U.S. Marshal Service? They probably were. Yeah, they probably had.
He isn't wanted for running a stop sign, okay?
Right.
This guy must have been wanted for some very serious crimes. And to me, if you get in your car and start, and you're armed, and you start ramming police cars, it's on.
Yeah.
If you're the police officers, it's shoot.
They want to go home,
too. Shoot to kill.
They want to go home, too.
Yeah, and so if the guy ran from the cops and rammed cop cars and had a weapon, you know, he's at fault, not the police officers. If what you described, you know, is how it happened. Yeah. So
it's all the way. It's sad all the way
24
around.
Cops hurt. So what happened was, as a result of this, there was rioting in the neighborhood. By the way, this is where I went to Thanksgiving for 20 years. Frazier community.
Really?
Oh yeah. My aunt used to live there. My aunt and uncle lived there. Frazier is a community in northern Memphis, as you've mentioned here. But if you've got 24 cops hurt, you got riots out there. I don't know what the anger was for towards the cops. Maybe they just don't like cops.
Well, I'm guessing, and again, more information, I'm guessing they thought the shooting was unjust and the anger was against the police in general. And
I wonder if this young man had rammed their car and had a gun and was going to shoot them, if they would feel the same way.
Well, the anger is part of the ongoing sparking of and fanning the flames of anger and discontent that already exists in the black community towards many in law enforcement. And
it goes back to Ferguson.
Yes, I mean there are political and or religious leaders who continue to fan those flames. I'm not saying there's not some injustice and there's not, you know, some discrimination. I'm sure that does exist with a small percentage of police officers.
Yeah.
But those flames are fanned because it is politically expedient for people to keep other people on edge and angry.
Yeah. All right, well, we'll see what happens there. Next up, Fred.
All right, well, on the other side of the world, the headline is, two oil tankers damaged in suspected attack in the Gulf of Oman. And what this story is about
Hormuz, I think, right?
Is it? Well, it's the Gulf of Oman.
Okay.
It's the
Strait of Hormuz. I'm sorry.
Yes. That happened early this morning, that time in the Middle East. And here are the reports at this hour that these two ships, were likely the targets of torpedoes that were launched by the Iranian Navy. And this is part of an ongoing tension in that part of the world. Now, the Associated Press this morning, they almost tried to link any controversy going on in the world to Donald Trump.
Oh, my goodness.
And so, you know, Iranians are upset with Donald Trump. And so this is creating great tension in the Middle East. As if we, you know, we're stupid people and we don't know the Iranians hate the nation of Israel and the Jewish people, and they hate the United States. They don't like Donald Trump because Donald Trump said the deal that Barack Obama made with the Iranians was a terrible deal.
Right.
And that Donald Trump and the military of the United States don't trust the Iranian people because they have made threats, the Iranian leadership, that is. The Iranian leadership has made threats to develop nuclear weapons.
Right.
And President Trump says, we're not going to allow that to happen. So this is part of, at least the earlier reports indicate, retribution, the Iranians showing we can do anything that we want. and we can jeopardize oil flow for the rest of the world. That part of the world produces 20% of the oil that the world uses. And in fact, right after this incident this morning, world oil prices went up about 4% right away. They are about creating chaos in any way possible. Again, these were not U.S. warships, although U.S. warships are in the neighborhood and they offered their help to these tankers. As far as we know, no crew members were killed. There were some injured, but they are believed to be in safe custody right now. So that is what's happening there.
Well, and that has been traditionally that has been a threat that's issued by the nation of Iran.
Yes,
we'll shut down the Strait of Hormuz.
Yes,
because if you look at the a map of that area, you'll see the Persian Gulf going towards the Gulf of Oman. There's a bottleneck.
Yes,
and that's the Strait of Hormuz. So they have threatened to shut it down completely, and this is the first time I ever remember them torpedoing an oil tanker, and their threat is, we'll just keep doing this all day. I'm guessing that the sanctions that President Trump has levied against Iran mm-hmm. are hurting them, mm-hmm. and they're wanting to kind of shake things up. The thing about President Trump is, and we've talked about his personality and how sometimes it can be abrasive, but the guy's a bulldog. If they think he's going to be intimidated and he's going to back down on these sanctions, they just haven't been paying attention.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not going to back down. And in fact, if President Trump, here's why I don't think they did this to a U.S. tanker, mm-hmm. one flying under a U.S. flag, because they know that Trump would hit the nation militarily.
Unlike Barack Obama, remember the incident when Barack Obama was president of those U.S. sailors sitting in this Iranian vessel?
Captured them
and made mockery of the American Navy people. And Barack Obama did nothing with that.
President Obama should have said, this is an act of war.
Yeah.
You have 48 hours to release them or we're at war.
Yes.
That's what President Obama should have done.
Yes.
But President Obama is not like President Trump. President Obama let's just say he's not President Trump. I don't want to insult President Obama, but he just was not a figure to be respected on the world stage.
Correct.
When it comes to the threat of military retaliation.
Yep.
Well, the U.S. Navy intervened, went in to help this.
That's correct.
Is it right? The people who were the sailors, or is that what you call them? You don't call them sailors, do you? What do you call the
people? Just the crew members, I think.
Crew members.
Of the tankers.
Who owned the tank?
Well, there's one of them.
Tanker, rather?
One of them is a Marshall Islands flagged, but Norwegian owned crude oil tanker. So these are not American vessels,
right.
Oil vessels. They're not. And another one was.
And we don't know who you're saying Iran, but we don't know. Iran has not claimed some of these Islamic terrorist groups they want to claim credit in their eyes for the attacks that take place, but sometimes when you have a country like Iran, they don't necessarily want to take credit. They just want to terrorize their opponents. What happened?
Well, we do know the incident for sure took place in an Iranian neighborhood.
Yes, and this is what they have always threatened. The other one was it had a Panama flag, but was a Japanese-owned tanker.
Which is kind of interesting because the leader of Japan happens to be in Iran right now.
Right.
Which is kind of strange.
Yeah, Shinzo Abe,
is
that how you pronounce his last name?
In Iran for what?
Just a visit.
Just talks.
Yep.
I think Japan gets a lot of their oil
from
coming through that strait.
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Well, let's come back home. Bernie Sanders yesterday had a speech where basically he was talking about his vision of democratic socialism. And he's trying to convince the American public of two things. Number one, that the whole idea of moving the Democratic Party to the left was his idea. It's very popular because the other Democratic presidential candidates are trying to steal that away from him. But also, he's also defending the idea of socialism being a good thing and mocking the president for saying socialism is a danger to this country. And as part of his speech yesterday, we want to play you a little bit about this. So this is Bernie Sanders from his speech yesterday. I think it was the University of Washington, cut number 9.
We must recognize that in the 21st century, in the wealthiest country in the history of the world, economic rights are human rights. And that is what I mean by democratic socialism. When Trump attacks socialism, I am reminded again of what Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. said, and I quote, "This country has socialism for the rich, rugged individualism for the poor," end quote. And that is the difference between Donald Trump and me. He believes in corporate socialism for the rich and powerful. I believe in a democratic socialism that works for the working families of this country.
So you see, you know, that's Bernie. He's selling socialism, and it is a well-worn script of the left out there that the little guy is being abused by the big guys, that the Republican Party represents the very rich, and it's the very rich that they're going to take care of, and they're doing so on the backs of the little guy. There's one problem with that: the economic realities we're living in today. And we all get these reports every month. Unemployment in this country at record lows. Employment amongst African Americans, Hispanics at record high. So the thing is, when Bernie says, you know, we have the downtrodden, Biden is out there doing the same thing as he travels across the country. He says he's talking to the people that haven't benefited from the tax cuts that President Trump
put in place. Why don't you talk to the people who have? I mean, why don't you talk to the people who have? The economy's doing pretty good right now. Better than it was in the Obama years, right?
Better than it's been in decades.
Yes.
In decades. So, I mean, it's pretty good. No, you're not going to have 100% employment with everybody making six figures. That's never going to happen. But I'm just saying that by all measurable standards that we've always used to judge the economy, it's doing pretty well right now. And you have to give President Trump credit for that. And those tax cuts and the deregulation that's going on. Now, the people like Bernie Sanders, who's a socialist, you know, they're never going to be happy. He might. If I were Bernie Sanders, I would not put myself through this misery. I would move to Cuba, enjoy the Caribbean, and work as a volunteer for the Castro regime down there, because that is where it's at, and show the world just what a real socialist democracy looks like, and I get you a reality show.
Yeah.
Call it Bernie in Cuba or something like that. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Get one of the Kardashians to come over to help launch the show, and there you go. But I would not continue to live in a country that's so unjust that Bernie Sanders says America is. Now, there you go. Why is it that a winner?
Or move to Venezuela. Go to a once wealthy country.
Duly noted.
You know, that tried socialism, and now they don't even have toilet paper.
No.
Okay? They're eating dogs down there. So go
ahead,
Bernie.
What Bernie Sanders wants to do is in fundamental opposition to everything that America has been about economically. Yep. And so it's just, we'll be back in a moment. Stay with us.
We got nothing but Italians on this show.
We're changing lives one question at a time. Trivia Friday is educational programming.
What big cat can't roar?
That's pathetic.
The mime cat. I've seen them. They got those white gloves on their paws.
You use milk to sweeten your breath.
In the first century.
What happened when the milk soured?
You got trouble.
Yeah, right that's there. A good.
See, you don't get a second date. I'll just tell you that right now.
Trivia Friday, 10 a.m. Central on American Family Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. You know, I'm asked often what my favorite part of the Holy Land tour is. And that's like choosing between your children, right? That's very hard to pick just one place to see or to visit that's the most special. But to me, it's the boat ride on the Sea of Galilee, I guess, is number one. That's just a very special day because you know that's exactly where Jesus was, the Sea of Galilee. We're seeing the same terrain that Jesus saw. But there's so much more to our visit to the Holy Land, our trip there in March 2020. We'll go to Bethlehem, Jerusalem, Jericho, Nazareth, and on and on. If you want more information on the tour to Israel, go to twholyland.com. That's twholyland.com.
Fox News Commentary with Todd Starnes.
Hello, Americans. A view from the porch. That story coming up. Tenny Davidson is known around the Comox Valley in British Columbia as the Waving Granny. Mrs. Davidson spends her mornings perched by her front window so she can wave at boys and girls walking to a nearby school, a tradition she started with her now late husband more than a decade ago. But Mrs. Davidson, who is 86 years old, is about to move to an assisted living facility. When students at Highland Secondary School learned the news, they decided to honor the Waving Granny. The other day, you can imagine her surprise when more than 70 youngsters showed up on her lawn holding banners, handwritten notes like, "We love you and we think you're awesome." Each one stood in line to give Mrs. Davidson a hug and flowers and red paper hearts. A final goodbye to the sweet lady on Guthrie Road who helped start their day with a smile. I'm Todd Starnes.
That's your Fox News commentary.
David Butts of Harvest Prayer Ministries challenges us to see prayer as a gracious gift from God.
Show us, Lord, how to pray with greater effectiveness. Lord, help us to understand more of your heart in our city, in our churches, in our nation, literally around the globe.
The Gift of Prayer is a powerful new DVD that teaches us the importance of prayer. It's a great resource for your church or family. Available for purchase or download from the AFA Cultural Institute at afastore.net.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the radio program Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. I do want to talk, in a few minutes at least, about the Southern Baptist Convention annual gathering in Birmingham, Alabama.
Which is wrapped up now.
Yeah, okay. It's the largest non-Catholic denomination and
the largest Protestant denomination in the United States.
Yeah.
15 or 16 million.
By Protestant, I mean non-Catholic.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Pardon me. So, live radio, you cough, you got to hit a button, or either everybody shares your cough with you. All right, so we're going to talk about that because there were a few notable things to discuss there. But before we do, we have a guest, Emily
Gow.
Emily is with us. She is from the Heritage Foundation. It's a conservative think tank in Washington, D.C. that we respect here at American Family Association. And we work with those folks on various and sundry topics and issues. Emily, thanks for being on with us.
Thank you.
What is your role there at the Heritage Foundation?
I'm the director of the DeVos Center on Religion and Civil Society. And okay. We work on life, marriage, and religious liberty.
Got you. Now, your name is spelled K-A-O, right?
That's right.
And you pronounce it how?
Gow.
Gow.
Like G-O-W?
Yes.
Okay, I just want to make sure I get it right because I'm no good with I'm no good with pronunciations of names. Oftentimes, as our listeners know very well. Tell us about the, you've written an article here on the Equality Act, which we've talked about here on this program and American Family Radio, and generally we've talked about it. The Equality Act, what is it exactly?
Well, the Equality Act, first of all, is very misnamed because it actually lead to inequality. So it is a bill, both in the House and the Senate, that would add sexual orientation and gender identity as protected classes to the 1964 Civil Rights Act. Basically, that would elevate one viewpoint on sexual orientation, same-sex marriage, sex differences, to become a civil right. And it would render the other viewpoint, the truth about marriage, the truth that there are only two sexes, would render that viewpoint to be ostracized by the government and punished by law.
Okay. So, this is, what in practical terms, what would this mean for our country? Would it mean, just tell me how two or three things that would we would see change radically.
So, you would see transgender bathroom policies across the country. You'd see transgender puberty-blocking drugs being prescribed to children. You'd see a nationwide preferred pronoun policy. You'd see nationwide transgender policies in athletics. So, women and girls' athletics would be ended, we replaced with co-ed athletics.
That's insane.
You would see private businesses have to pay for sex reassignment surgeries in their insurance policies, and you'd see nonprofit charities have to do the same.
Yeah. Who in the world could be in favor of that, especially people who are not even religious or conservative? You mentioned the idea of ending, well, it wouldn't officially end women's athletics, I guess, but eventually it would destroy it, because what you're saying is, with the Equality Act, the United States federal government is saying to our whole country, you must allow boys to participate in girls' athletics. You can't stop
if they identify as girls.
Yeah, but they're still boys, right?
Well,
here we go again. You and
right.
I've done this before.
Right.
I understand what you're saying. You understand what I'm saying, but go ahead. We're not arguing here, Emily.
No.
The problem with gender identity as a category is that it is completely subjective. So it's in a person's own right. mind whether they identify as, you know, the opposite sex or not. And so you have people who really do struggle with gender dysphoria, who genuinely believe that they are, you know, born into the wrong body. But you also have people, you know, who are potentially going to take advantage of these policies. But the fact is that once you have one man or one boy enter into a competition, you have now turned that girls' competition or that women's competition into a co-ed competition.
Yeah.
So it would be the end of women and girls-only sports. And we're already seeing that even without this law passing,
yeah.
that the NCAA champion in the women's division in the 400-meter hurdles is now a biological male.
Yeah, it's insane. That's insane. And so the Equality Act did pass in the House of Representatives by the Democrats with a handful of Republicans three weeks ago, I guess it was. Nancy Pelosi has championed this.
Joe Biden has said if he's elected right. president, he would push
right.
it.
By the way, we've got Emily, the article she wrote on this, our guest right now from the Heritage Foundation. It's much more detail than we have time to go into here on the program. But she has, we posted that on our Facebook page. So if you want to watch the show today or get access to this story that Emily's written, go to our Today's Issues Facebook page. We're also live video streaming on YouTube as well. Ed, did you have a question for Emily?
Well, Emily... This law, you mentioned that even nonprofits might be subject to it. American Family Association is a Christian nonprofit. My understanding about the so-called Equality Act is that Democrats were very intentional about not granting any religious exemptions. So with American Family Association being a nonprofit, are you saying that the Equality Act could be used against us to force us to hire homosexuals or to open our bathrooms to those who are gender confused?
That's right. They would do that. And also, the Equality Act specifically says that the Religious Freedom Restoration Act cannot be raised as a defense to any claim of discrimination. And we are opposed to discrimination against anybody simply because they're gay or transgender, because everyone should be treated with respect. But not everyone should be forced by the federal government to agree on issues like same-sex marriage or, you know, on the idea that a man can become a woman. And what this bill would do is it would crush one side of those disagreements. It would crush the side that says marriage between a man and a woman and sex is based on biology, not a person's own perception.
By the way, let me just insert here, Ed, before you follow up with that. This is only passed in the House of Representatives, the Equality Act. To his credit, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has said he will not bring this up for a vote. So that's good news. But if the Republicans were not in charge of the Senate, this would be a frightening moment for our country. President Trump has said he will veto this should it come to his desk, the Equality Act, the misnamed, as Emily said, Equality Act. So I just wanted to make clear that we're talking about legislation that's not imminently about to become law. We're talking about something but we're going to have to
keep
an eye.
There's a battle.
There's a battle going on. We're going to have to keep an eye on this.
Yeah.
And sometimes these Republicans, they get weak-kneed. That's another thing we're going to have to watch for. You know, a reporter from the Washington Post calls a Republican congressman and goes, "So you're against equality?" And that's when, if the Republicans don't have conviction and don't understand the issue, they go, but "No, I'm for equality." You know what I'm saying?
Right.
If you explain it like Emily's explained it, then it makes sense to be opposed to it. Go ahead.
Yeah, and just to reset, we're speaking with Emily Gao, who's director of the Center for Religion and Civil Society at the Heritage Foundation, great organization. Emily, let me just ask this follow-up, and then to Fred Jackson, you want to jump in here, that's fine. Emily, what we've just discussed, which you have stated, that there is no religious exemption in the so-called Equality Act. They very specifically made sure this bill basically guts the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. Why? Why are they making such an intentional move to go after religion?
Well, that's a good question, because back when the Religious Freedom Restoration Act passed in 1993, it was completely bipartisan. It was supported by Chuck Schumer and Ted Kennedy. It was signed into law by Bill Clinton. But overall, I think there's been a decline in the Democrat support of religious freedom. They've also introduced a bill called the Do No Harm Act, which would also gut the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. So I think it's a larger systemic problem in the way that Democrat politicians think about religious freedom. They don't understand, it seems, that religious freedom protects everybody. It protects both people on the, you know, in a debate on same-sex marriage. It protects both people, you know, who have disagreements about gender identity. When we have freedom for both sides, that's when Americans flourish. I mean, disagreement is just part of having, you know, a civil discourse. But increasingly, we see initiatives in Congress from the Democrats that would shut down debate. It would punish one side of the debate. Similarly, with abortion, you know, we've always allowed people to have opposing views on abortion. We've always had, you know, the conscience protections for doctors who don't want to perform abortions. But, you know, increasingly that is being debated too. And with the transgender medicine that many doctors don't want to do, I mean, sterilizing children with puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones, a lot of doctors think that's bad medicine. But this bill would basically put them out of business.
We've been talking to Emily Gao, K-A-O is how Emily's last name is spelled, and her commentary that she wrote about this topic of the Equality Act, titled "Congress is set to pass an Equality Act that will devastate women's sports." That's Equality Act in quotations. We posted that at our Facebook page, and certainly you can visit the Heritage Foundation website. They do excellent work there in our nation's capital. Thank you, Emily. We appreciate you being on AFR.
Thank you.
You know, if anybody, you know, is out there listening and saying, oh, you're just fear-mongering, you know, that would never happen, I just invite people to read about Baronelle Stutzman. If there is any doubt in people's mind that the real agenda is to punish people who are opposed to the homosexual transgender lifestyles, just read the story of Baronelle Stutzman, who was back in the news in the last few days because the Supreme Court of Washington State once again has ruled against her because she didn't want to use her services as a florist arranger to do a florist arrangement for a homosexual wedding.
Yeah. Right.
And so she is being punished by the state for what she believes.
State in Washington. Well, let me ask you this, Ed. How do you answer the claims? Because I've heard this before. The LGBT activists and their sympathizers are going to say this to us if they could be on the air with us and they were opposing Emily in a debate or something.
Right.
They would say this. Listen, Wildman, Vitagliano, Jackson, you can believe whatever you want to believe. Okay, I really don't care. You can be a bigot if you want to, but you cannot use your religion to discriminate against your fellow Americans. So how do we respond to that argument?
Well, it's first of all, if we're talking about the Constitution protects in the First Amendment the free exercise of religion. Now, I've been trying to get back into doing some exercises because I need to, okay? I don't just think about it in my head, all right? You have to do it. You have to act when you exercise. The free exercise of religion is just like that. The founders did not protect your thought life. They protected the exercise of your religion. So if we have a church and we wanted to go out and feed the poor, okay, that is exercising your religion. If, as a Christian, I want to go vote according to my convictions, that is the exercise of my religion. People like these gay and lesbian activists want to shrink the First Amendment to only be what's inside my head, and that's not what's protected in the First Amendment.
Do you remember what Barack Obama said? He talked about you have the freedom to worship.
Hillary Clinton said the same thing.
Hillary Clinton. There is distinction between freedom of religion and freedom to worship.
They did that on purpose.
Yes, I know
that
they
was
did.
Intentional.
And what he was saying is, do what you want inside the walls of your church.
Right.
But as soon as you come out the door of that church, you belong to us.
They wanted to make the case that worship inside your church is what is meant by the free exercise of your religion.
Yeah.
They want Christians out of the public square. And so when they say to Baronelle Stutzman, you must participate in a gay wedding, okay? Who's really the one whose rights are being trampled here, okay? Yeah. It's not like Baronelle Stutzman has a sign up saying, if you're gay, get your flowers somewhere else. She's saying, my faith does not allow me to participate in a gay wedding. This law is trying to force me to do that. And that's a distinct difference.
Or put me out of business.
Or put me out of business.
Make me sell my house. I mean, it's awful. And I would contend, as we'll move on to the next topic, I would contend here also, as I've said here before, the LGBTQ people are not being discriminated against.
No.
In this country. On any kind of massive scale, certainly. As I've said before, we have a religious freedom law, 1523, HB 1523, that was passed and signed in the state of Mississippi. Governor Bryant signed it 2 or 3 years ago, I guess it was. And at the time it was signed, the whole world came down on Mississippi saying what an awful law to pass to discriminate against gay and lesbian people. And
they predicted.
Huh?
They predicted massive discrimination.
Yeah. And remember that? And then here we are 2 or 3 years later, and can't find one person to bring a lawsuit against the state of Mississippi because they can prove they've been discriminated because of their sexual orientation. So it just doesn't happen.
And that's in a conservative state.
Yes, yes, right. So it just doesn't happen like these people claim it does. And it didn't even happen with these Christian bakers or
florists.
Or florists mm-hmm. These Christian bakers or florists, they don't have a problem with anybody coming into their store and buying things or doing business or commerce with them. They had a problem with participating in a homosexual, quote, wedding ceremony, right?
That's right.
Really something outside of.
Can I just give one quick example of what I usually, yeah. This is what I tell people. I said, let's talk about something different than a gay marriage. Let's say my best friend divorces his wife. He's having an affair with his secretary, divorces his wife, and wants to marry his secretary. And I'm a baker. And he comes to me and he says, Ed, you're my best friend. I want you to make the cake for my wedding to my secretary. I say, bro, I can't do that. You need to repent of what you've done and you need to reconcile with your wife. And I am not going to attend your wedding and I'm not going to make a cake for it because I disapprove of what you're doing. Now, should the government be allowed to force me to make the cake for this guy? Right. Should they force me to participate in his wedding when I believe it's wrong? That's the kind of thing are doing.
It's a very good analogy.
Jack exactly Phillips, right. the baker, he has no animosity or hostility towards homosexuals. He's in the position.
As the vast majority of Christians don't.
He's saying, I don't believe that what you're doing is right. Right. I'm not going to participate.
Right.
I'm not going to attend, and I'm not making a cake.
But these gay activists, these LGBT activists here, and not all of them fall into this category. We mentioned this before. There are some that are reasonable on this because what they want to do, and this is what this Equality Act is all about, they are wanting to go after the Christian church to control it and its message, like they do in Canada, with its message. They want to make the doctrine, if that's what you want to call it, or the Christian teaching that homosexuality is sinful. They want to ban that in every way possible. So they're targeting these Christian business owners, while these LGBT people who are complaining could go right down the street and buy their cakes and their flowers and their photography for their weddings from 100 different places.
Right.
That doesn't matter to them. They want to be punitive against the Christian for having this belief.
Which is why Jack Phillips, while he was battling on the homosexual wedding cake case, a transgender individual sought him out and said, Jack Phillips, I want you to make a cake celebrating my transition from male to female, knowing he would say no. And that person brought a lawsuit and it is now privately suing him. So this is all about punishing.
All right. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio. This Equality Act would be horrible for religious freedom. We'll keep an eye on it right now. It will not come up for a vote in the Senate, according to Mitch McConnell. Next topic.
Well,
the Southern Baptist Convention.
Yes. Can we talk about that? You mentioned the Southern Baptists have wrapped up their annual meeting in Birmingham, Alabama. You know, the Southern Baptist Convention meetings through the years, usually the agenda went along the lines of reports about missions work, what's happening with growth within the Southern Baptist Church, convention, all of these sorts. That was the priority. But this year, if you've been reading any of the headlines coming out of the meeting, it really wasn't about that. Now, they talked about the gospel first, but they talked a whole lot more about other things. And what was making headlines in the secular media and even in the Christian media had to do with what's called two recommendations that came forward. And this stems from, and I think most of our listeners are familiar with this, some news stories in the Houston Chronicle about sexual abuse taking place within congregations of the Southern Baptist Convention. We probably don't need to remind people, but every Southern Baptist church is autonomous. It's unlike United Methodists and Episcopals. They don't answer to a head office.
Certainly not like the Catholic Church.
Not like the Catholic, a hierarchical church. So what the leadership of the Southern Baptist Convention have advocated is that they want to set up a body, a group, a committee, that would accept allegations of sexual abuse, let's say by a pastor somewhere, a Southern Baptist pastor. And if it was proven, they would defellowship that church, that particular congregation, from the Southern Baptist Convention. Likewise, with regards to if a congregation somewhere said we should never allow any immigrants from Saudi Arabia, well, then that's ethnic bias. We're not going to allow that church to fellowship. Here's the thing. So they passed those recommendations. It was really interesting, by a two-thirds vote. It wasn't a ballot vote, folks. It was kind of like, put up your hand if you favor these things. And the moderator gets up there and says, yeah, two-thirds, and away they went. I was amazed by that they did that. But here's the problem. Now they're going to set up this body. How are they going to deal with it? Because one of the recommendations is that there be a database set up that presumably would be run by the convention head office in Nashville, that would accept even credible, what they call credible allegations against a pastor or a youth pastor, whatever the case may be. Now that person...
Boy, you're asking for trouble right there.
Yeah, that person has not been found guilty, has not been arrested.
You're talking about, there's going to be some churches sued over that.
Exactly.
That doesn't sound to me like it was very well thought out. What you're describing.
Yeah.
Am I the only one who?
No. Well, the problem is, if you accuse a youth pastor of sexual abuse, and the home office there in Nashville says, well, it's credible, so this person's name goes in the database, that young man is finished. That guy's...
His life's over.
He's going to sue.
Yes.
Yeah. He's going to sue and say, I did not do it. You've just accused me of being...
So does the church then have to hire a lawyer to defend themselves?
Well, no. The Southern Baptist Convention is going to control the database.
If I was the youth pastor, I'd sue both. Now, let us... I want to make sure we make this clear. We're not defending pedophiles or sex abusers.
No.
What we are going after here is a plan put forth by, in my opinion, by the hashtag MeToo people within the Southern Baptist Convention, who want to be seen as being on the side of victims, which is fine. Real victims should be protected. Mm-hmm. But this is a disaster, a legal disaster, just waiting to unfold for the Southern Baptist Convention. You can't have a database with just quote-unquote credible accusations. You are going to get sued.
Well, and there's another problem here, too, for the Southern Baptist Convention if they set up this database, because there are laws in individual states that if you're aware of an allegation, you are to report that to local authorities.
Yeah.
But if you're just throwing the name up to Nashville and saying, hey, we're getting reports of something going on with this guy, then again, the head office is going to be in trouble with the law in that state from which the allegation comes from. I mean, there's all kinds of problems with this.
Yeah, and well-known author Beth Moore, herself a Southern Baptist, she says that sexual abuse within... sexual abuse within the Southern Baptists is rampant.
That's hogwash. I don't believe that.
Now, she says our family, meaning the Southern Baptist Church, is sick, she said. I'm not making this up.
No,
folks.
I know.
I have no reason. I have nothing against Beth Moore. I'm just telling you what she said. We can talk more about that in 5 minutes.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.